Embarking on a high conflict divorce can be overwhelming, leaving you feeling uncertain and powerless. That's precisely why the Divorce Readiness Masterclass was created, a free 1-hour live session to empower you through the toughest divorces. Uncover the entire scope of the divorce process and learn our secret strategies to reclaim your power. Visit jbddivorcesupport.com/masterclass and begin to confidently handle your divorce today. Welcome to the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast, where we invite you into a journey of healing and personal transformation that will radically change your divorce experience, heal your heart while refining your character, and set you up to be effective and feel empowered as you navigate the practical and emotional challenges of divorce. I'm your host, Karen McMahon, founder of Journey Beyond Divorce. My divorce brought me to my knees, and it also transformed me and set me on this path to help you.
This is one of the times I would say in your relationship when having very clear and firm boundaries is most important, because it can go so far off the rails emotionally if you don't contain it with boundaries. They're going to go to their coping mechanisms. They're going to have strong reactions. So I would say you keep it short, you keep it sweet, and you give your partner the honor of being able to go away and think about something. And I also wouldn't demand any kind of a response from them.
You don't get divorced from someone, you get divorced to someone, especially if you have children. So if you're going to set the tone for how this is going to go, I think kindness has to be at the centerpiece anyway. If your partner responds in a way that's unkind or unnecessary or not helpful, you don't have to take that in. You can just say, sounds like maybe now is not a good time to continue this. Like I'm going to go ahead and exit and be happy to pick this up later when we're at a better place.
Stepping into the realm of high conflict divorce can be daunting after years in a dysfunctional marriage that's left you feeling diminished and uncertain. In our High Conflict Divorce Demystified series, we acknowledge the emotional roller coaster you're on, facing self-doubt and fear, especially regarding your children and finances. We're here to provide empathy, education, and guidance as you navigate the maze of legal intricacies and emotional challenges ahead. So let's dive in. Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Today we're talking about difficult conversations around divorce, telling your spouse, kids, and even friends and family. And with me today is Laura Heck and Zach Brittle. Today's episode, we're going to navigate some of the most heart-wrenching conversations that come with the decision to divorce as we delve into that delicate art of communicating about your divorce with your spouse and children and your widest circle of friends and family. Broaching this subject with your spouse is perhaps one of the most profound discussions you'll ever have, and it requires a great deal of courage and sensitivity. And we'll discuss how to express your feelings honestly while also respecting the emotions of your partner as they hear it. And then we'll turn our focus to the children. Kids can have a range of emotions from confusion to fear, anger, and we'll equip you with some compassionate strategies to help ensure that this transition impacts their well-being as gently as possible while keeping the lines of communication open and honest. And then lastly, we're going to consider how to communicate your decision to friends and family. And this part of the conversation can often bring unexpected reactions from support to surprise and even judgment. And we'll talk about how to handle the various responses and maintain your own emotional balance. Joining me today, as I said, is Zach and Laura, a team of marriage and relationship therapists. Zach Brittle is a couples therapist in Seattle, where he has a counseling and coaching couples. He's been counseling and coaching couples for over a dozen years. And he is a best-selling author of The Relationship Alphabet and the Marriage and Therapy Journal. And Zach and Laura co-host an awesome podcast called Marriage Therapy Radio, where straight-talking marriage therapists and their brilliant guests tackle the most common problems every couple experiences. And Laura Heck is a relationship expert, speaker, certified Gottman therapist, sex therapist, and master trainer of the Gottman Seven Principles program. She and Zach are teaching partners and co-hosts of the Marriage Therapy Radio. With no further ado, welcome Laura and Zach.
Thanks.
Thank you. It's so nice to hear that read back for the first time. Our bios, I was like, man, Zach, you're a pretty impressive dude.
Yeah, I need to update my bio. A lot of that, I was like, wait, a dozen years. That's probably a few years old, but it's
over
all true.
Over a dozen is still true.
It's still true.
Over
it's still true that it's over been a dozen. Dozen. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. He just has more gray hair now and more years under his belt.
Yeah.
So folks, I was on Zach and Laura's podcast a while back, and they just bring an incredible amount of experience, wisdom, and thoughtfulness to their conversations. And this is such a tender one. They are just the perfect guests to have. And so let's dive in. I remember when I first decided to tell, and most of our audience are coming out of very high conflict marriages. And so I was such a broken version of myself. I was such a working on my rageaholism, scared to death of my spouse. So I was so emotionally dysregulated. And then I had to have this really difficult conversation with someone who had serious anger management issues. And so it's really quite the hot mess. And
yeah,
I would love to talk about some keys for individuals to keep in mind in, okay, the first conversation, the conversation with your spouse. You've decided maybe they're scared, maybe they're just angry. What are some good ideas on how to approach it, and even perhaps what has to be said and what doesn't have to be said?
Ooh. Well, I think first thing that pops into my head is what you have already mentioned, which is emotion regulation. That would be the first piece of the puzzle that I think would be really important, is making sure that you are in a place where you can communicate and you are not riding the waves in the storm of being dysregulated, and knowing what it takes in order for you to be able to regulate. I think the hardest times to have a conversation about divorce is when you're in the middle of a fight or an argument. That's when you're going to boil over and you're going to say the words and you can't take them back. Or maybe you've said, we should just end this now, a million times before. And now you're saying it again, it's not going to have the same impact. But if you're emotionally regulated and you're having a conversation with your partner, it's going to land differently, and it's going to actually be a conversation rather than a spillover. So that, I think, is the first key, which you had already mentioned, is just making sure that you're in a space where you're emotionally regulated.
I'd back up even a little bit, because you said something that I'm not sure is the correct assumption. You said the first person you're going to talk to is your partner, right? Like, this is, I'm finally going to have this. And I think you ought to practice first. You ought to practice with your therapist. You ought to practice in the mirror. Ooh. You ought to practice with your friends, your trusted friends. I'm not talking about talking smack about your partner, but I'm talking about, like, make sure that you do have your message down. You're clear about it. You know, to Laura's point, I don't think divorce conversations are ever helpful when they're coming from this space of rage, right? I always tell people, if you're going to get divorced, do it thoughtfully. Have your conversation in a coffee shop, not in the kitchen while you're throwing plates at each other. I mean, it just doesn't, it's hard to even know what's real in those moments. I think it's important to be vetting your own decision-making process and practicing, and, you know, speaking to your therapist or your couples therapist or your pastor or your mom or whomever it is, that's going to be like helping you stay sane in the midst of that, feels like an important first step, so that you can show up to the partner conversation and be equipped, have a little bit of confidence in what it is that you're bringing to the table.
Yeah, I love that. And in fact, let's go even earlier, now that we're going backwards. Let's go even a little bit further backwards, which is, once you decide to leave, the myriad of things I've heard that people want to say in that conversation are extensive. And so let's talk about what really needs to be in that message. Like, is that the time to wax on about all their faults? What do we say and what do we not need to say in communicating this very big decision that was made?
Yeah. The first thing that popped into my head, which I have seen in session with our couples, is that it's almost like they have to stack the evidence in order to support that what they're saying is something that they're not going back on. It's, I want a divorce. And here's the, all the evidence that supports, like all the ways that I've been hurt, all the ways that you have failed me, in order to support their decision. They have to like justify the reason why they're saying I need a divorce. And I don't think that is applicable during this conversation. So I would say in the process of communicating to your partner, they may need to understand and know for themselves how or why the relationship came to the place where it dissolved, where it wasn't something that they wanted to choose any longer. But there's many divorce conversations that happen. But if we're just talking about the first entry point of saying, I have been in an emotional divorce for the last 2 years, and now I'm finally looping you into where I have been, this is something where I would say you are just going to talk about yourself in that moment and expressing yourself, talking in the I, from the I position, and certainly not stacking the evidence. That might be a later conversation where they're seeking to understand how you came to that decision, but I don't think that that needs to be a part of that initial conversation.
Beautiful.
Well, I actually think it's really unfair if it were. Like, it'd be really, really unjust. Like, if you had a job and you had your job annual review in November, and they were like, okay, thanks for coming in your annual review. You're fired now because here's all the things you've done wrong since last November. Here's all the evidence I've been stacking. That would be really, really unjust. Like, they need to be checking in with you monthly, quarterly. I mean, in your job, this would make sense, right? Like, you would be like, wait, I didn't have a chance to correct all this stuff. I mean, you didn't like my third quarter numbers and now you're firing me. Why didn't I find out about it in the third quarter? You know, I think this is, to Laura's point, like, there shouldn't be this, like, I'm arriving with all of this like packet of information about why I'm now divorcing. There, we should be, I don't really like to use the word should. I think if you're going to divorce responsibly, you got to have heads up. You got to have a heads up a year in advance, a couple of years in advance. You know, this is what I'm trying. This is what's going on for me. This is what's happening. And that's just kind. I mean, never mind responsible, but just to say, hey, this isn't working for me. Yeah. This isn't working for me and I need change. Hey, this still isn't working for me. Hey, this still isn't. Hey, now I'm starting to think about divorce. Hey, now I'm starting to consider my options. I think I'll go back to, you need to do those in a coffee shop or in a therapist's office. But if you're just, you know, wasting away in a vacuum by yourself, and then all of a sudden you sit down and go, hey, by the way, you're fired, I think it would be really hard to assume that that conversation is going to go well, period.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? I do think that like most of the people who come to us, they've been having the conversation for years. They're married two, 3 decades. They're married to somebody where there's not a lot of reconciliation. There's not a lot of accountability or ownership. And so the person that they're divorcing may not have ever heard them. So it may feel like the first time they're hearing it. But I think that those are great suggestions, both the location, having a third party, if it feels safer. I love that idea that if you don't feel safe or you just need that safer container, to have some kind of mental health expert, coach, somebody on your side.
Witness.
Keeping it in the eye.
Yeah, just, yeah.
And can I give folks a heads up that if you are planning on bringing in a third party, can you let that third party know in advance that you're planning to let your partner know that you would be ending the relationship? Because I have been 100% completely blown back when I'm meeting somebody for the very first time. They're saying, hi, we need this couples therapist. And I'm trying to get a lay of the land. And the lay of the land is, today is the day that I am going to tell my partner that I don't want to be in this relationship. And that has absolutely shocked me. And I'm sure it shocked their partner. And it's like, what was I here for? I would use an already established therapist or someone that you have a relationship with and let them know that that's your game plan.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
One of the things I would love for you to talk about is what happens psychologically when we receive devastating evidence and how that plays into how much someone wants to say, excuse me, in this initial conversation.
So you're asking about what happens psychologically when we receive devastating information.
If I'm the receiver of the, my partner wants to divorce me, what's going to happen? What happens to me? Is that the question that you're asking?
What happens to you? And because we know that, how does that impact how much the other person says? Like after I say the divorce word to you, like Zach, I want a divorce. Like something happens to you. And are you even hearing how much I say afterward? And I think that it's really valuable to talk about psychologically what happens to the receiver. And therefore, when someone's putting those talking points together, how extensive should they be or how limited should they be? You've heard the saying, April showers bring May flowers. If co-parenting has been difficult this year due to your ex's alcohol abuse, you need SoberLink. How it works is simple. Your co-parent will test at scheduled times. Built-in facial recognition will confirm their identity. Tampa sensors will flag any attempts to cheat. And results will get sent instantly to your phone, so you know that your kids are with a sober parent. Lay the groundwork for brighter days ahead. Visit soberlink.com/JBD to learn more and get $50 off your device.
I feel like you already know the answer to your question, which is that most likely you're going to put your partner in a space of being physiologically flooded, being like having a kind of having their fight or flight symptoms or tactics lock in, right? Like if I am the bear, if I'm the recipient of devastating news that I'm not expecting or not ready for, my body is going to say, uh-oh, I better do the thing that I'm really, really good at, which is either running away and shutting down or fighting and be creating an adversarial situation so that I don't have to like that, so I don't get killed or murdered by a, you know, saber-toothed tiger that's bearing down on me. Maybe I'll panic and start to try and fix it. That's the third one, right? There's fight, flight, or fix. I think there's probably hundreds of variations on all of those things. But the answer, I think, is particularly if I'm not expecting it, and here comes this body blow, I'm going to resort to the neural pathways that I know very, very well. And that's going to vary for different people. That's going to vary for different people based on what they learn, how they learn to adapt to their own experiences of trauma early on in their developmental life. So, Lord, I don't know. Is that what you would say? Or do you have a different point of view maybe that I'm not missing?
It's interesting that you asked this because I just had this question. I was speaking with my best friend who is a doctor in the ICU. So he's giving it hard information. I said, how often are you pulling people into, like, family members into that private room to have hard conversations? And he said, I do it every single day. And I said, how do those go? And he said, basically, I know that when they're not listening until, like, there's nothing up until they're not paying any attention until I say either your loved one is going to be okay or your loved one is dying. That's the information that they're seeking. They want to know, how should I respond? And so he said, I have to lead with that as quickly as possible. And then I know whatever I say after that, they're not going to hear. And he said, it's a very short conversation. And I went, oh, that makes so much sense. And so he said, my job's really easy. I just have to give them the information that they're seeking as quickly as possible. And then I get out because I know that they're going to, like you said, Zach, respond with the shortest and most familiar neural pathways that have been created over time. They're going to go to their coping mechanisms. They're going to have strong reactions. So I would say you keep it short, you keep it sweet, and you give your partner the honor of being able to go away and think about something. And I also wouldn't demand any kind of a response from them. I wouldn't ask for anything from them. And I would set them up for success by putting them in an environment where they can escape. They can go away and have some opportunity to self-soothe rather than having to function, because they're not going to have the capability or capacity to function after that type of news.
Right. Beautiful. Yeah. So that brings the issue of timing into it, right? So we're talking about location, we're talking about keeping it in the eye, and now the timing of it, so they're not like going to work or having to be with the kids right afterwards, or
right,
something like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the other thing I'm hearing is once you're flooded, not much is going to be heard after that. So my experience is there are people who want to start talking about the house and the kids and the custody, mm-hmm, and
right
it's
away.
Like, wah, wah, wah. Nobody's hearing
totally.
That.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it sounds like from what you guys are saying, a very brief, kind, eye-focused conversation is really the first conversation.
Yeah.
Hearing you right.
I think so. I mean, it just seems like I think your word, I think they're both good. I was going to key on kind. I think you don't get divorced from someone, you get divorced to someone, especially if you have children. So if you're going to set the tone for how this is going to go, I think kindness has to be at the centerpiece anyway. And if brief is the order of the day at the beginning, sure, you're going to have many, many conversations anyway. And I think often, you know, I've seen so many divorce conversations get derailed because people say stuff that is unkind and that they don't mean. You know, what are you going to tell the kids? I'm going to tell them the truth that mommy cheated on me. I'm like, that's not the truth. The truth is mommy cheated on me and I couldn't forgive her. And that's not even the whole truth. There's more and more and more and more. So the point I think is, yeah, let's stay kind and then let the rest of it flow, particularly if kids are involved. I mean, there's no reason to, this is a little bit of a sidebar. When people say, I'm going to tell them the truth, I go, no, you're not. Like when your kids ask you about 9/11, you don't tell them the truth. You don't say,
tell them your
well,
version of reality.
You tell them the age appropriate truth. You don't tell them all the gory details. You tell them, yeah, it was a tragic event that happened and it was really hard to understand the motivations and a lot of people got hurt. And I mean, that's what you tell them, which is the truth. You know, you don't talk to them about the graphic images and the long-standing effects and the different, you know. So I think, yeah, kindness should be king, at least at the onset. I think it should be king, period. And if you don't have access to that, wait, just wait, wait a little bit. I can't be kind right now. I gotta go for a run, or I gotta go talk to my own therapist or whatever it is that you need to do.
Right. That emotional regulating part. And then I think that just if we could stay on this for a minute before we pivot to the kids, our listeners can be kind. There's a very good chance that what they get back won't necessarily be kind.
Fair enough.
And so can we just talk about that? And I'll just give you a couple of examples. One is certainly exploding or shutting down. And the other is wanting to actually talk about everything in the moment, even though they don't, and they're not really connected to their prefrontal cortex. It's like, well, let's talk about who's going to get the house, like right then and there. And so the person who's giving the information, last question on this conversation is, what is the advice you give to them regardless of what the shocked spouse, the partner of, is, however they behave, right? They're surprised, they're behaving. What's the rule of thumb for the person who just delivered that information, who tried to do it kindly and in the eye?
Oh, the first thing that I thought of is, this is an uncontrollable situation. You only have yourself that you can control, and you have to let go of how that information is going to be received, and your partner is going to respond in any sort of way. And also, the thing that I keep thinking about is sort of this idea, this is a little bit of a sidebar, that I remember, like, when you are coming out to, let's just say, to your parents, I'm LGBTQA, whatever it might be. And you have to remember that you have been coming to grips with this decision for many, many years. And it's just now when you're deciding to share this with other people, and they're 2 years behind you. And, you know, ideally, like what we had talked about is that if you are, let's say, coming out to your partner as, I don't want to be in this relationship anymore, ideally, they're not 2 years behind. They've been in this journey with you and they're aware of your unhappiness. They're aware of all of that. But we have to let go of how that person's going to receive that information and have control only over ourselves and how we are sharing that with them. I completely lost track of what your specific question was, but that was what was on my mind at the moment.
Yeah, well, and what I love about what you said is for those of us who do the telling, we've been grieving for a while, right?
It's absolutely. Like,
we've been in and out of marriage counseling, we've been in and out of conversations, and I, the teller, have been slowly coming to this point where it's like, okay, I'm scared to death, but I have to do this.
Yeah.
The other person may be in a lot of resistance, even though they've been along the journey. They're like, it's not that big of a deal. Every family has problems. And so the response, and that's the question, was tips on how the teller, what they can do after they tell and their spouse responds, however they respond. Mm. And the first thing I'm hearing is you can't control it. So you can only control
yeah.
part. So that's yeah. one piece of it. Is there anything else just in terms of what our listeners can keep in mind?
I just think you have to have really healthy boundaries, right? If they start to freak 100%. Out or yell, and that is a piece of work that some people have to do like for their whole life to like establish those boundaries. But if your partner responds in a way that's unkind or unnecessary or not helpful, you don't have to take that in. You can just say, sounds mm-hmm. like maybe now is not a good time to continue this. Like I'm going to go ahead and exit and be happy to pick this up later when we're at a better place. You can hold the boundary of, it is okay for you to be upset. It is yes. not okay for you to talk to me like this.
That's right.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is you can be kind and acknowledge and validate
yeah. how
difficult right. this is, and that whatever their emotional reaction is, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And hold your boundary so that you are not being abused in one way or another or mm-hmm. What have you.
This is one of the times I would say in your relationship when having very clear and firm boundaries is most important, because it can go so far off the rails emotionally if you don't contain it with boundaries. And if you have had a boundaryless relationship, this is probably going to feel really uncomfortable for you and your partner, but there is no better time than to establish a healthy boundary of being able to say, I'm going to keep this short. I'm going to keep this brief. And I want to be, the word that I was thinking of, or the phrase, is boundaried compassion. I can have boundaries and I can also have compassion for you and your experience. And I think it's also helpful before, maybe if I was thinking about the timing of being able to say, I'm going to share some really hard stuff with you. And I want this to be a really healthy conversation. And if it gets to a place where it's unhelpful, I think we need to take a break. If that's not something that you have already been practicing as a couple, being able to establish those boundaries ahead of time before you have these really tough conversations.
Yeah. So that, which brings us right back to one of you had that original point of practicing, right? So like scripting mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing is script. Know what you want to say and what you don't want to say.
Write it down. Have it written. Absolutely.
Practice it and know once you're done that a couple of different things might follow, and know what you're bound. Yeah. Know what you're bound.
Well, and I think too, and if you're in a yeah. high conflict situation, that may be one of the boundaries you need to establish, which is, we're done talking about this. I'm happy to write this back and forth to you. And even then I would say you need really clear boundaries. You can't text and also WhatsApp and also email and also leave a voice message. And I think there's still an app called My Family Wizard, which maybe you've heard of before, but, and it's like 100% of our communication goes through this app, which I think also has the filter for like, you sure you want to say it like that? Yep. Maybe you want to soften your language. But I think if you're in a high conflict situation where the boundaries are unclear, it is okay for you to say, this is going to be how we're going to communicate about this now. Because people are, I mean, particularly if you're unregulated and you're not very well boundaried, say as the receiver of this information, you know, those people tend to make up the rules as they go. And that means the game is always changing, which means you never know how to keep score and you don't know who's winning. And I don't really like that language, but you need really clear rules on how we're going to move forward if we're not operating at the same emotional intelligence level, basically.
Yeah. And folks, we have other episodes that really talk about your safety and having a safety person and what to do with the kids. And today is really about the conversation, but there's a lot of other pieces that go into this. And yeah. we'll be talking about that throughout the series. So this is, I think we've done a great job of covering some of the foundational things to keep in mind when speaking to your spouse. And if we could pivot now, so now you've told your spouse, a period of time has gone by, you've both agreed, and I'm just going to set the stage for this. It could go a couple of different ways. I have a lot of clients who choose to tell their children separately because the other person is so dysregulated that they're going to give the kids information that's going to scare them. They're going to talk about how the family is devastated or throw the other parent under the bus. And so one thing people have to decide is, and my advice is always best interest of the child. Is it in the best interest of the kids to hear from both parents together? Or is it in the best interest for you to pour a safe foundation so that when the other parent comes in, you have something? So I want to put that forward as a caveat. And so here we are, you can have children. Of course, there's all these different ages. We can only talk about this so much today. This could be a whole episode in and of itself. So you have children of different ages. You even have adult children. So maybe today we can touch on some basics to keep in mind when you're talking to the children.
Well, I've already said one, which is you got to keep it age appropriate, right? I mean, that's just regardless of what age they are, they only understand and have access to the language that they understand and have access to. So if you try to give them adult information using adult language, that's not going to work. I'll say one more thing, Laura, and then you can take it away, which is that I know that as a 50-year-old, when my friends' parents were getting divorced in the 80s and 90s, it was a really big deal. Divorce was kind of a new thing that didn't really happen all that much, certainly not in my community. And the conversation always looked like, hey, we're going to sit you down on the couch and it's going to be the two of us and it's going to be an hour-long conversation about all of the things. And that was the one conversation. And I think these days, the landscape has changed quite a bit. Kids are much more familiar with modern families and blended families. And so there's a less of kind of a shock thing going on for these kids. But I do think that the hour-long conversation is no longer the norm, right? You instead of one 60-minute conversation, you need to have 60 one-minute conversations that are—
Man, I feel like we could finish each other's sentences, thinking the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just have to break it down into chunks that are manageable. Nobody wants to remember, I remember they sat me down on the couch and I can remember the color of the curtains and the time of day. That's setting your kid up for what do they call them? Core memories that aren't going to serve them in the future, particularly if they're trying to find their own way and it's a secure attachment.
So certainly age appropriate, certainly brief again, another word, brief conversations because of they're going to have
Well, of course, brief, but if you have any questions, you can ask us at any time.
Right.
Yeah. Not we're done. Okay. Click. The sex talk is the same way, by the way. It's not one, here's where babies come from, and now you have all the information you need. It's, hey, anytime you want to ask about your body or your, I mean, it's the same notion. And I think that's, again, age appropriate and developmentally appropriate.
So I have to interject with that, because if you are going to have or offer up to your child, whatever age they are, if you have any questions, they have to feel safe being able to talk to you about that. And that you're accessible. And the way that you do that as a parent is that you don't have to know all the answers 100%. Like, you are charting uncharted territory here. And it's okay as a parent to be able to say, I don't know. I don't know what the future holds for you, but, or for us, or I don't know where you're going to live. That's okay to not have all of your ducks in a row and to be able to not have access to that information at that moment. But I would say that if you're going to have a conversation with your kiddo, you want to make sure that they feel like you are okay to have that conversation. So if every time I come to you and I have a question about my future as a kid and you burst into tears or you get angry or you start throwing your spouse under the bus, that conversation is not going to happen again. And so you really have to foster that relationship that, like, I am a safe place. I might not know all the answers, but I can have that conversation with you. And you do that by showing up and being a freaking adult in these really tough, scary situations, right?
Which,
like, you have to be able to create security.
And it means you need to let your kid love the other parent.
Yes. Oh my gosh. 100%.
It's so good that you said that, because I think that when everyone's really being honest, it's like, there's a competition. And it's like, it's almost like a human nature thing that you're fighting, right? Because of course you're so at odds and you're so excited when the kid's like siding with you. And of course, that's the worst thing that you can do. So I love the way you said it. You have to let the child love the other parent and not bring out the list of reasons why they shouldn't or what was done to you and all of that.
The other thing that just popped in my head too is the desire for kids to take care of their parents and to want to make them feel better. And that might feel really lovely. Like in those moments when your kiddo comes up to you and wraps their arms around you and says, I don't want to go to school. I can see you're sad. That's really lovely that your kid is so attuned to you, but also it's not their job to make you feel better in these situations. And that can become pretty habitual, I would say, in these situations where you're not at your best self because you're grieving, because you're angry or whatever it might be. And your kid is going to be so deeply attuned to you that they're going to want to make you feel better. And it might mean that they join in and they throw the other partner under the bus. It might mean that they start bringing you things in bed and nurturing you. Also not their job. It is a tough balance to have to be a parent while you're also grieving the loss of your relationship.
And making sure that your child is healthy in their love and not developing codependent types of behaviors.
Yeah, absolutely.
And is there anything that you would say you absolutely should say or shouldn't say? So I'm hearing how much emotion, don't cry on your therapist's shoulder, your friend's shoulder, not your child's shoulder.
Yeah.
And yet, it's okay to show emotion. It's important that you're not like a robot going through this, right?
Yeah. So
there's a balance there. And then what needs to be said or what shouldn't be said? Are there any thoughts on what the content of that conversation is?
Man, I don't know. I feel like 100% of my clients complain about how their parents messed them up, whether their parents were great parents who never got divorced and were at every single soccer game, or whether they were parents who divorced right away and were acrimonious. Like 100% have this opportunity to say, my parents blew it and they blew it in this way. So my thing is, can you also repair? Like as you continue to go through the relationship with your kid, even if you said the wrong thing at 10 o'clock on a Thursday, you know, can you by Saturday afternoon go, hey, that was not right. If I had to do it again, I might've said this. Like, is there a way for you to demonstrate that the rule of the day is repair? It's not perfection.
I love that response. I think the bar is really, really high, right? Like the assumption is that you can prepare and you can nail this conversation. And I think what we're saying is just plan on screwing it up, but get really good at repairing. Zach, I had this great conversation with Hanger. Do you remember his
Hagner,
first name?
Larry.
Yeah. Larry had a great conversation with his teenage son, where his teenage son disclosed something really big about himself and something that he had done. And I talking to him, he said, gosh, I just kind of feel like I could have handled that differently. And I said, okay, what's the problem? There is no problem. You go back to him and you say, man, I've had a day to be able to process. I've been thinking about this. This is how I responded. And this is how I wish I would have responded. And sometimes it just takes me a little while to gather my thoughts. And I think there is nothing more powerful than a parent being able to accept fault and responsibility and to apologize to their child.
Yeah, I love that. We began the practice of the do-over, me and my kids, when my divorce began, because we were all such a hot mess. And became this thing when everyone, like we could be driving in the car and all hell is breaking loose. And then somebody asks for a do-over and you repair and you redo. And it became a beautiful practice for us. So
love.
So embrace the do-over and repair as you go. Love that.
Yeah. Well done, Zach. Well, if it hasn't already been mentioned, I think the big piece of the puzzle is just assuring your child security and safety. And however that you're able to do that, if it means that they have been living with one parent and that parent is struggling emotionally, mentally, addiction, abuse, whatever that might be, and ensuring security and safety means that they will be living just with you. But I think that's the big piece of the puzzle is they're just wanting to know, am I going to be okay? And are you going to be okay? And it's okay to say, I'm not doing okay right now, but I can assure you that I'm going to do everything I possibly can to be okay and that you're going to be okay.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts on the kids before we wrap up with friends and family?
No. I'm sorry that I'm sorry to me, I'm sort of like, I'm sorry that your marriage didn't work out and that you that your kids are going to grow up in a setting that doesn't have two parents or those two parents in the same home. But that's not what kids need. Kids don't need two parents in the same home. Kids need to be able to look at their adults in their life and see them model effective conflict management and respect and regard and friendship. And if those two people can live in the same house, that's fantastic. That's amazing. But if they can't, then you still have to elevate those values on their behalf just so that they can become, they have access to becoming a functional adult.
Well said. Excellent. So as we wrap up, typically once your spouse and children have been informed, there's that pressure, need, or just unfolding to start telling neighbors, people at work, friends, family, and people tend to bring all of their own stuff to the table in these very tender conversations. Mm-hmm. So let's do this one in a broad stroke. Any tips on sharing something so vulnerable, so tender?
I have a lot to say about that one. I think tip number one is don't put people in your life in the situation of having to take care of you. It is such a burden when, especially when something so private is made known to you and you are coming with all of your insides on the outside. And now the burden is on the person you're telling to have to take care of you. And I would say get to a space where you can emotionally take care of yourself and that you're not burdening your colleagues, your coworkers, your neighbors with having to put all the pieces back together. I think that is so unfair. And so, I mean, obviously we have our support people and they're in agreement. It's a relationship that you're in with this other person. I take care of you, you take care of me. We are in an agreement that when my insides are on the outside, that you're going to show up for me. But when a neighbor that I know very little is, you know, crying and snotting and sharing all the personal details about the affair and all those things, now I am in the burden of having to take care of that person. And that's just not fair. So I would just, you know, be very clear as to the role that this person has in your life before you share that information.
I love that. That gives a lot of guideline. Excellent.
Yeah. Zach, any thoughts on that?
I just think, again, we live in a world where nobody's going to be surprised. If they're in your world and they know who you are, it's really hard for them to be like, what? You know, so tell people on your own timeline in the way that you want, in the way that is helpful to your process. You don't owe anybody anything. So it's not like you, I guess family maybe is important to keep them in the loop. But, you know, in terms of your community, we think we're the biggest deal on the planet and we're not, you know, or we are, which means that when I tell you about my divorce, you immediately start thinking about you and your life and whatever. And I don't mean this in any kind of pejorative way, but I think people think everybody's thinking about them all the time and they're not. They're thinking about themselves all the time. And so give yourself a little bit of grace that like your story is yours and it belongs to you. And like Laura said, you don't have to make it require anybody else to make it bigger, but you also don't need to fear that somehow you need to be ashamed or subject to other people's judgment or perception about the relationship or who you are in the relationship. Who you become after your divorce will say a lot more about you than who you were before or during your divorce.
I think the caveat there, and I completely agree with you, is the person telling is in such a frail state emotionally, certainly with these high conflicts, that I would say be discerning on who you share with. Because if you come from a family, a strict Catholic family and nobody's divorced, or if you come from a culture where it's not, or if you have a judgmental friend who never filters what they say, right? Like, so I think that there are certain things where not assuming that everybody is going to show you grace and that you want to protect yourself. And so be a little bit more discerning about who you tell, and you don't have to tell anyone. And I think that's the other piece is some people, so often I get the question, like they asked me, and so I felt like I had to answer, like, hey, I heard. And I'm wondering if you have, and maybe we can just end on this. So somebody says, hey, I heard that you and your wife are getting divorced. Like, what's going on? right? Like you're standing there, deer in the headlights, and it's like, I don't want to be rude, but I've been in this abusive relationship, so I feel like I'm obligated to say, what can somebody say when they're kind of confronted by someone who might not be so bad and they're stuck?
I call it the elevator pitch. Yeah, that's what you would say.
I would go, yeah, it's complicated. Thanks for asking. Yeah. I'm okay. I'm going to go over here and get a hot dog.
Okay. I got to go to the bathroom. Yeah.
I would just hold a boundary. Like, you don't owe that person anything, you know?
Yeah. That is the shorter version of what I would call like the elevator pitch, which is if I'm still sorting it out in my mind, or maybe I'm still waffling, maybe we're in the process of still discerning whether or not we want a divorce. And we told people, yes, we're getting a divorce. Now we're kind of maybe trying to reconcile. It's back and forth. It is complicated. And just being able to have that generic response that you can say to anyone that you don't owe anything to, but still establishes a clear boundary of, I responded to your question, but I'm also not giving you any information that doesn't feel appropriate at this time. And that's something ideally that you and your partner can agree upon. What is the scripted elevator pitch that the two of us can agree upon if somebody is not a friend of the marriage or a friend of the family? That would be ideal.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I actually like the very short version too, because it is complicated. I do appreciate your concern, and I don't want to talk about it.
Somebody wanting to talk to you about your divorce doesn't mean you have to talk to them about your divorce.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. So we're back to boundaries, which is perfect. A perfect note to end on. Boundaries, boundaries, boundaries. any last broad stroke tips before we wrap up and say goodbye?
Oh man, I feel a heavy burden for the folks that are listening, and I understand how we have so many high hopes for our relationship, and nobody signs up for a marriage thinking they're going to get divorced. And so I have a ton of empathy for that. But I also know in my heart that some marriages aren't meant to last. Sometimes divorce is the best possible thing that you can do, maybe even the most loving thing you can do. And so what I tend to hope for my clients and my friends that are getting divorced is that they will lean into the new version of themselves that is a byproduct of their experience, you know?
Well said. Well said. I'll let you finish on that, Zach.
Bump, mic drop or whatever.
So how can our audience find you? And please mention your podcast again so that they can follow.
Ooh. So the podcast is Marriage Therapy Radio. We drop our episodes every Tuesday, and then they can find us on Instagram, which is Marriage Therapy at Marriage Therapy Radio, or our website, marriagetherapyradio.com.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for joining us and for all the great pearls of wisdom. And folks, check out their podcast. It's excellent.
We have fun. Yeah, thanks for having us on, and we appreciate it.
And we'll be back again real soon with another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Until then, you take care.
You've been listening to our podcast, Getting Educated, Regulating Your Emotional Reactions, and it's been really helpful. Yet you know you could do better, be better, and you're wanting and needing more support. That's where our coaching service is a game changer. We're here for you when you need us the most, ensuring you have all the tools and resources at your fingertips, guiding and supporting you to be more effective. Our free rapid relief call helps you gain a broader perspective, commit to your best next steps, and determine what coaching support is right for you. Visit rapidreliefcall.com to book your call today.
Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com, where our team of coaches support both men and women through our one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources. Stay tuned for our next episode, and I'll talk to you soon.